the headlines. Israel's indiscriminate strikes and artillery fire kill over 30 Palestinians in 24 hours as the death toll from the regime's genocide reaches 34,400. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah releases footage of its attacks on Israeli military positions in Al-Manara settlements in northern Israeli-occupied territories. And hundreds of pro-Palestine protesters hold a rally in Washington, D.C., condemning the U.S. administration's unbridled support for Israel's genocide in Gaza. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Israel's genocidal war in Gaza continues to claim the lives of more Palestinian civilians across the besieged strip. A fresh Israeli airstrike on a residential building near the southern city of Rafah killed at least 10 Palestinians. Israeli airstrikes targeted two homes in the Al-Baraj and Nuseirat refugee camps in central Gaza Strip, killing three civilians and injuring several others. In the past 24 hours, Israeli occupation forces conducted four massacres, which took the lives of at least 32 Palestinians and injured 69 others. Since last October, with the start of the regime's onslaught in the besieged territory, around 34,400 Palestinians have lost their lives and over 77,000 others were injured. Many of them are women and children. Thousands of victims also remain trapped under the rubble as Israeli forces prevent ambulance and civil defense crews from reaching them. Muti Abu Musabib was earlier with us from the city of Deir al-Balah and gave us an update on the situation in Gaza.
The Israeli occupation forces continue their air strikes and attacks, whereas the Israeli artillery shelling maintained its shelling against the eastern part of Khan Yunis and Rafah City over the last night. It was horrific as that Israeli shelling was intensified and was tense, actually. While, as it's worth mentioning as well, as the number of the Palestinian civilians who were unalived over the last attack against the residential building in Rafah City, particularly in Yabna neighborhood in the east part of Rafah City, actually has amounted to 10 Palestinian civilians, including four children. Knowing that Rafah is still absorbs roughly 1.5 million Palestinian civilians who are still grappling with these catastrophic humanitarian conditions, and they are very terrified over the rising concerns and the threats of the Israeli occupation forces to conduct their ground offensive against Rafah City. Here in the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli warplanes also carried out several airstrikes against Al-Mughraq and Al-Zahra town. At least two airstrikes hit those areas. In addition to that, Al-Zawaida neighborhood was hit also by another airstrike. The humanitarian conditions are still exacerbating, according to Gaza's municipalities, that the current situation is catastrophic in terms of the drinkable water. According to Gaza municipality, that 50% of water wells were completely destroyed by the Israeli occupation forces.
The Lebanese resistance movement has released footage of its latest retaliatory attacks against Israeli military positions. The attacks targeted the command headquarters of the Golani Brigade's 51st Battalion in the Al-Manara settlement in northern Israeli-occupied territories. In an earlier statement, Hezbollah said it had directly hit the target using assault drones and guided missiles. The movement said the operation was in response to the Israeli regime's strikes on civilian areas in southern Lebanon, as well as the regime's genocide in the Gaza Strip. The Lebanese resistance movement and Israel have been engaged in clashes on Lebanon's southern border ever since the regime launched its genocidal war on Gaza in early October. Hezbollah says it will continue its attacks on positions in the northern Israeli-occupied territories until the regime stops the genocide. Israeli security forces have violently clashed with protesters in Tel Aviv, calling for snap elections and the resignation of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Security forces cracked down on protesters gathering outside of the headquarters of the Israeli occupation forces in central Tel Aviv. Protests were also held in more than 50 settlements across occupied Palestine. Israeli protesters argued that Netanyahu has failed to secure the release of the captives held in Gaza. They demand that the Israeli cabinet strike a deal with the Hamas resistance movement to return the captives. Israeli officials say 129 captives remain in the Gaza Strip. Dozens of captives have also been killed in the regime's airstrikes on Gaza. Hamas says it wants a complete ceasefire and the withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza as part of a ceasefire deal to release the captives. The humanitarian aid flotilla destined for Gaza has been blocked in Turkey after Guinea-Bissau decided to remove its flag from two of the vessels.
On Friday afternoon, before the inspection was even completed, the Guinea-Bissau International Ships Registry, in a blatantly political move, informed the Freedom Flotilla Coalition that it had withdrawn the Guinea-Bissau flag from two of our ships, one of which is our cargo ship, already loaded with over 5,000 tons of life-saving aid for the Palestinians of Gaza. Without a flag, we cannot sail. But this is not the end. Israel cannot and will not crush our resolve to break its illegal siege and reach the people of Gaza.
The activists also said Guinea-Bissau had made several extraordinary requests for information. They described those requests and inspections as unusual and political. The Turkish Humanitarian Relief Foundation is the primary organizer of the Civilian Freedom Flotilla Coalition. The group is comprised of human rights activists, including lawyers, doctors, and nurses, who came together to deliver aid directly to Gaza. About 280 of them were present at the press conference and shouted slogans in support of Palestine. Three of the flotilla's ships have been docked for a week south of Istanbul, and it was planned to set sail on Friday. Earlier, we were joined by human rights activist Mohsen Nakhvi from U.S. Texas to further discuss the flotilla situation. Here's what he had to say.
The level of oppression and atrociousness is what surprises me, because we've reached a point in this conflict where we have now almost 15,000 children who have been killed. These ships were carrying 5,000 tons of aid, of basic humanitarian life-saving aid, which was deliberately blocked by a proxy of the Zionist regime to enter into Gaza. So it is quite clear where the Zionist regime stands. They absolutely have no intention of letting any kind of relief enter into Gaza. They want to see Gaza suppressed and oppressed. So these aid on Hamas, these are going to the innocents who have been killed, massacred, murdered in Gaza. This aid was for the injured who've been brutally injured by the Zionist regime. This is for them. The kind of escalation that we have in the region, especially in the seas, it seems like the Zionist regime, given its current circumstances, would try to resolve this, this concern that they have through their proxies, through diplomatic means. I don't see a direct attack on these activists. I don't foresee a direct attack on the ship itself, even, because it would be a diplomatic media nightmare for the Zionist regime, which they're already going through.
In the U.S. Capitol, pro-Palestinian protesters gathered outside of the venue of the annual White House Correspondents Association dinner in a bit to highlight the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Protesters were angry at the U.S. president for his support of the Israeli killing machine. They shouted slogans such as "Shame on you" and "Hands off Gaza." Some demonstrators performed acts symbolizing Israel's atrocities in the occupied territories as they demanded an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Several protesters were arrested by security forces. Earlier, Palestinian journalists called for the boycott of the event. The protest was organized by Code Pink, a nonprofit organization that accuses U.S. media of co-opting the Biden administration's involvement in the genocide. It says that it aims to raise awareness of how the U.S. media perpetuates anti-Palestine narratives while ignoring Israeli war crimes. Pakistan's political opposition groups have issued a stern warning to the U.S., cautioning against interference in Pakistan's internal affairs. They've emphasized the imperative completion of the Pakistan-Iran gas pipeline project, irrespective of external meddling. Nasser Kazmi has more in this report.
Pakistan's religious and political groups and lawmakers are on the same page against the U.S. interference in Pakistan's internal affairs. In a firm and assertive statement, the leader of Pakistan's largest religio-political party, Jamaat-e-Islami, Hafiz Naeem, has issued a cautionary note to the United States, urging against any meddling in Pakistan's internal matters. emphasizing the significance of the Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline project. The chief of Pakistan's largest religious political group underscored the necessity of its completion, irrespective of external interference.
The Pak-Iran gas pipeline.
Pak-Iran gas pipeline project must proceed unhindered as it is crucial for the nation. Who gave the U.S. State Department authority to comment on the Iranian president's visit to Pakistan? Why is the U.S. interfering in Pakistan's internal matters? The Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline is vital not just for fulfilling Pakistan's energy needs, but also for boosting economic activities within the country.
In a parallel development, members of the Pakistani parliament echoed similar sentiments, calling upon the government to expedite the completion of the Pakistan gas pipeline without any further delay, while reaffirming Pakistan's sovereignty and its right to pursue crucial infrastructure projects without external interference. The lawmakers underscored the project's critical importance in fulfilling the country's energy requirements. Anti-U.S. sentiments have emerged within Pakistan's political leadership after consecutive warnings from the U.S. State Department following the visit of Iran's president to the South Asian nation. These warnings were issued to Islamabad, cautioning against potential sanctions if Pakistan pursued trade relations with Iran.
The Iran-Pakistan gas pipeline project has been a contentious issue, hindered largely by international sanctions imposed on Iran. Despite these challenges, Pakistan has maintained support for the project, considering it as a crucial element of its economic strategy to address energy shortages and stimulate economic growth. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Anti-Israel protests are gaining momentum on U.S. campuses, as more and more university students are standing in solidarity with Palestinians. Students camped out for the second day on the George Washington University campus, despite threats that they could face temporary suspension. Students at Arizona State University also joined the wave of U.S. campus protests against the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. In the state of Illinois, hundreds of protesters marched on the University of Chicago campus. They echoed pro-Palestinian chants that have been reverberating through multiple American universities over the past days. Around 100 people were arrested at a university in Boston. Encampments in support of Palestine also continued at New York's Columbia University. The Education Center has been an epicenter of anti-Israel protests since April 18th. In over a week, hundreds of protesters have been arrested at colleges across the U.S. Protesting students demand university authorities divest from companies involved in Israel's military. Iran's 6th International Export Exhibition is underway in the capital, Tehran. More than 2,000 traders and business people from nearly 70 countries are in attendance at Iran Expo 2024. Gisumi Shahmadi joins us now at the venue of the exhibition to tell us more about that. Well, Gisu, obviously it looks like this is a pretty big event from what we're gathering in terms of just the mere number of participants. Tell us more about this exhibition.
Welcome, and you're right. We're at the 6th International Exhibition of Export Opportunities in Iran, which is dubbed 2024 Expo. The Tehran 2024 Expo. Now, this is a very big event, and over the past couple of years, this has become even a bigger event than it used to be. That is all in line with President Ebrahim Raisi's policy to expand relations with neighboring countries and beyond, all countries who would want to be business partners with Iran. And this year, it's even more crowded than it was last year. We have more than 2,000 business people and investors from 119 countries taking part in this exhibition. I can tell you from what I saw yesterday and today that the presence of Persian littoral states and African countries is very significant this time around. And of course, where I'm standing right now, this is the free zones section. You know that Iran has a number of free zones, and these are, I could say, investments havens for foreigners who would be interested to make any kind of investments in Iran. And right now, actually, I am joined by head of the Chabahar free zone, who, incidentally, Kaveh, is the first woman to be appointed to this position. Thank you very much, ma'am, for joining us. If you could please tell us what is the significance of Chabahar free zone.
Greetings to you, and today I proudly announce that as the CEO of the Chabahar Free Trade Industrial Zone, that this is only oceanic port that receives goods and has a logistical, from a logistical viewpoint, it can turn its potential into reality, and it's a great opportunity for investors, both domestic and foreign, to use this port as their target of investment and for exports, because in this port currently we have all of these shipping lines to Indian and UAE ports, that they can reduce the time, the travel time, to increase their profits. So we have two ports here, and so we have eight and a half million tons in these places, and we can expand that to 90 million tons, and all of these transit and port capacities next to all the facilities that have been provided to free trade zone, such as 20 years of exemption for all of these taxes, are some of the provisions that we have considered for this area. And there we have even foreseen giving some land to investors to invest in. And this organization has an expanse of 8,000 hectares, and this shows that there's room for expansion, for investment in it.
Kaveh, there you had it. Chabahar is one of the most important ports in Iran. It is one that even the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has emphasized on its development. And you just heard all the opportunities that are available now for investors in that region. There are also other free zones in Iran, and I will be trying to get hold of the CEOs of those free zones and give you more information about investment opportunities.
All right, that was great. Thank you so much for that. It was a pleasure hearing her, your coverage of that. Thank you so much. Gisim Bishamidi there from the site of the exhibition.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of law,
listeners special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, April 28, 2024. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. As I always say, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Today is April 28 and we are experiencing spring days here in Iran. Iran Rosewater Festival is held every year in spring, mainly hosted by the cities of Qamsar and Niasar in Kashan, located in Isfahan province. Qamsar Rosewater is truly reputed in the world, and in terms of quality, it is absolutely unrivaled. Every year in the second half of spring, Qamsar, as I said, located in Kashan in Isfahan province in Iran, hosts domestic and foreign tourists who travel to this city to get acquainted with how to prepare rose water and to be able to prepare them directly from rose water producers and other quality traditional products. In Farsi language, rose water means gulab, and the rituals for obtaining rose water is called gulabgiri. So, in this edition of Listeners Special, I'm going to talk about gulabgiri, or the rituals for obtaining rose water in Qamsar province, located in Kashan in Isfahan province. So, for the time being, let's see who has sent us reception report or email or letter from around the world. For this edition of Listeners Special, we've received reception reports from Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh. As you may know, Mizanur Rahman is one of our old and regular listeners. From India, we've received reception report from Anand Mohan, who is one of our old and regular listeners. And from Bangladesh, we've received reception report from Tariq. So Anand, Tariq, and Mizanur Rahman, thank you very much for your reception report, and thank you very much for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And here we've received an email from Bashir Ahmad from India, who is one of our old and regular listeners. Antonio Santos from Brazil has sent us a piece of email. And again, from India, we've received an email from Shivandapol, who is one of our old and regular listeners. Stay with us, please. I will be back with you. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and I was saying there is something interesting about Rose Water Festival in Iran. In Qamsar, in such a festival, you experience a bit of history, a dose of nature, and a whole lot of culture. Yes, I said culture, because rose water, or in Farsi, as we say, gulab, has been used by Iranians since ancient times as medicine, food, and even perfume. Even in Farsi poetry, the word gulab, literally rosewater, is used in different occasions. For example, renowned Iranian poet Maulana says, "Come out here where the roses have opened, let soul and world meet." Well, gulab or rose water is obtained from a particular kind of rose known as Mohammadi rose in Iran. Harvesting flowers seem to be the most important part of the process. So, about this process, we will talk more later during the program. But for the time being, let's see what Bashir Ahmad from India, one of our old and regular listeners, says. Bashir Ahmad from India says, "Greetings to you all. My name is Bashir and I am a listener of the IRIB English Radio. More than 6 months have passed since the crimes of the Zionist regime in Gaza, and the Israeli forces continue their atrocities in Gaza thanks to the support of the leaders of the Western countries and America. We all know that a ceasefire is very important at this juncture for the people of Gaza, but Israel and the US are the ones mainly to blame for hindering and vetoing it at the United Nations. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Iran, to you, Bashir Ahmad from India, and thank you very much for writing to us. It's really good to know that you follow the world developments, especially what is happening in the Gaza Strip, the genocide against Palestinians by the Zionist regime and its accomplices, especially the United States. And as you said, the US and the Zionist regime are hindering the ceasefire. So anyway, we hope that peace prevails in the world, especially in the Gaza Strip and Palestine. And as we know, the liberation of Palestine will soon happen with the collapse of the Zionist regime, with the dissolution of the Zionist regime. And we are sure that that Palestine is from the river to the sea. Yes, and as people chant, Palestine will be free, and Palestine is from the river to the sea. And there is no such a thing as two-state solution. So many thanks for writing to us, Bashir Ahmad from India. We wish you luck and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Thank you again. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and I was talking about the process the gulab or rose water is made. There are modern and traditional ways for obtaining rose water in Iran. In traditional way, people put heavy copper pots on ovens made from bricks, stones, and mud. They put the rose petals, into the pots for boiling, adding water to the pot. During the whole process, the flame should be steady and mild. After being boiled, the extracted water is kept in special bottles. Almost every 30 kilograms of rose petals plus 80 liters of water is poured into each pot that is connected to metal pipes for the steam moving through to obtain the hydrosol. For your information, all Iranian households have a bottle of rose water in their kitchen, as it is the main ingredient to many sweets, foods, and drinks in Iranian cuisine. That's great. So, let's see what Antonio Santos from Brazil says. He says, "Hello from Brazil. My name is Antonio Santos and I live in Sao Paulo. I'm sending you a reception report and would like to get a QSL card or electronic QSL from your radio. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Antonio Santos from Brazil, many thanks for writing to us. So, you live in Sao Paulo, Brazil. which is located in southern hemisphere. And as far as I know, while we in Iran are experiencing a spring, because Iran is located in the northern hemisphere, you in Brazil are experiencing autumn days in Brazil because it's located in the southern hemisphere, and that's wonderful. I mean, the system of creation, it's great. So please accept our EQSL or electronic QSL from us, IRIB English Radio, as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Antonio Santos from Brazil, thank you very much for writing to us. So after a short break, I will be back with you. Dear listeners, for your information, the Holy Kaaba in Mecca, which is the most sacred place in the Islamic religion, is washed twice a year with the rose water of Qamsar. So, Qamsar is actually a patch of paradise. Seize the day and pack your suitcase to be in Qamsar, because as Iranian renowned poet Hafiz says, hold dear all the flowers and commune, came to be and will wither with a breeze or a gale. It was great. So let's see what Shivandapol from India says. Shivandapol has sent us a piece of email and says, greetings from India. I'm Shivandapol and I am from India. I am a regular listener of IRIB English Radio. My hobby is radio listening and collecting stamps, QSL cards, program schedule, etc. Please send QSL cards and other promotional items about Iran. Thank you. Salam and warm greetings from Tehran, Iran to you, Shivandapol from India. Appreciations to you for this email. Please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast are always welcome. Thank you, Shivandapol from India. We wish you all the best. And here we have to wrap up this edition of Listeners Special. But before saying goodbye to you, I just wanted to send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports, as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, Anand Mohan from India, Tarek from Bangladesh, Shivandapol from India, Bashir Ahmed from India, and Antonio Santos from Brazil. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us at IRIB English Radio and Listeners Special Program. We wish you all the best. God bless you. Goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to English Radio @IRIB.IR. please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. It has been more than 10 days now that students at Columbia University, New York, pitched tents and started their encampment to support Palestinians and to condemn the genocide by the Zionist regime in Gaza. The students are also demanding that their university divest from Israeli companies and entities. What started at Columbia has now spread to protests across the United States and beyond. What is it about Palestine which is galvanizing young people to stand up and say to their government, enough is enough? Well, stay with me as we look at that and a lot more on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of Manchester, Sarah Trusdale, human rights activist. And out of Moscow, Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Basira Press. Thank you both for being with me. Let's start it off in Manchester. And Sarah, why do you think the genocide taking place in Gaza has ignited this type of reaction from especially university students starting off in the United States and now, of course, spreading to Europe?
Thank you for having me. I think it's because we've all been watching it for 204 days now, being live streamed to our phones, watching hospitals. 15,000 children have been murdered, 35,000 at least innocent men, women and children. They've obliterated, they've dropped the equivalent of two nuclear bombs on the Gaza Strip. I saw a report that said it's going to take 14 years for them to remove all the rubble. And we're all watching this, and the reason I think it's ignited it is because we all expected by this point, any sane person expected by this point, that it would have stopped, and it hasn't stopped. And instead of it stopping, we're getting, the guy from the State Department standing there and saying, we're going to let Israel investigate their own war crimes. And I think it's just got to the point now where something was going to give. And obviously what happened at Columbia, I think, has just, it's ignited the what everyone was feeling anyway. I think everyone was waiting for someone to do something, and the Columbia thing, I think, has set the domino, knocked the dominoes over and set it all off, really.
Okay, well, Andy, these students, whether in the U.S. or Europe, can be expelled from their universities or basically blacklisted when it comes to getting good jobs, so they are risking a lot. Why do you think they still choose to fight on behalf of the Palestinian cause?
We have to put ourselves in the shoes of students and young people in the United States. The situation you described, well, if they don't do anything, they don't really have a good situation financially or otherwise anyway. So it's as if they have nothing to lose. The average prospects of a young person to even have a dream of owning a house or owning property is totally out of reach for most people. It used to not be the case. It used to be the case that people could even graduate with a high school diploma and be able to have a one-income household and live pretty comfortably. They can buy a house. They can have more time with their families. Now people can't even have even two jobs and afford some of the basic things of life. for example, even in the high schools, because they would teach people useful career skills and how to, they would become certified plumbers and electricians out of high school. Now they go into college and now they don't have any job prospects because the bankers really robbed everybody blind. So they have this feeling of resilience. They have this feeling of there's nothing to lose. And when they see their tax dollars going to support a genocidal regime, instead of alleviating the economic situations and other negative conditions within the United States that might actually give them some hope for the future, well, why shouldn't they put themselves at risk? Because it's not like their situation is going to be good anyway. So there's a spirit of this is the end of the road, and there needs to be a change in the United States. And there's also, beyond their own self-interest, obviously there's the issue of conscience as well, that they've been programmed to think that Arabs and Muslims and Palestinians are subhuman. Finally, that kind of smokescreen over their hearts, the natural inclination towards goodness that God has put in everybody's heart, is starting to shine through. So I think there's a lot of positivity here.
Mm. Well, sir, what started out as condemning the ongoing genocide of Palestinians, the students have now transcended into also seeing the role of their government, the role that their government is playing in this genocide, and are demanding that it stops. So let's talk about that side of things. Do you think that the students can actually put enough pressure on their governments to change at least this unwavering support for the Zionist regime?
I hope so. Like we say, so I saw an article and someone said it's not a small thing that's happening. It's big universities like Harvard, Princeton, Columbia, places like that. It's the children of the elite, as they said. So it's children that usually, not children, young people that usually would, like you say, it's never happened before like this. It's never been where there's so much anger. And as Ali just said, there's nothing really to lose at this point. So I think hopefully they can pressure the government, because these students are the future of that country. They're going to be voting. And I don't know at this point how America can't change course, with the fact that, I mean, a large majority of America now, young and old, against the government policies. And if they carry on, I mean, the way they're treating the students, they're rising up. If you're a middle-aged person, you're watching your child be thrown to the ground in, I mean, the police state that's exposed itself in America. So I think they can, if the pressure keeps up. They've got to keep the pressure up, because everything's got to be. It's like when the World Kitchen people were murdered and everyone got dead angry for a couple of days and then it all went away again. I mean, this has got to be sustained now. And I think it's sort of like Ali said, in America now, you haven't got anything to lose. You've got a future where you can't afford to live, blah, blah. So, yeah, I definitely do think they can, because they've got nothing to lose. So,
okay, well, Ali, are you surprised at the way the U.S. police have cracked down on these students and professors as well?
Absolutely not. The police in America are basically trained to think of the people as like an enemy, as an enemy force. The one thing that many people don't like to talk about, and this is a controversial thing to talk about, is that the police of America belong to a Freemasonic fraternity called the Fraternal Order of Police. There are obviously many police who have a degree of racial supremacism against different groups of people in America. But even those who don't, they have a sort of, if they belong to the secret society, they have another type of supremacism, which may not be racial, maybe type of philosophical, that they're these enlightened beings, and you know, God, man is God, and the so-called enlightened among men have the right to treat other human beings as a vengeful God would treat. So they don't view themselves as servants of the people. If you look at, you know, for example, in the Islamic Republic of Iran, you'll see police officers helping people to change their tires, or if anybody's in a bad situation, they'll be helpful. And the U.S. is shoot first and ask questions later. They even, you know, have abused autistic children in the past, and this is very painful for myself as I have autistic family members. So this is just a mask-off moment. The police don't do anything about the criminal drug gangs that run the streets of the United States, because they're part of it. The CIA and the Zionist Mafia are part of the criminal drug network. They don't do anything about child trafficking rings, because there's huge amounts of child trafficking among the elites of the United States, as well as the Zionist lobby like Jeffrey Epstein and everything like that. So they only target people who oppose this very sick and satanic system for doing practically nothing. These kids just have tents. They oppose no one, but you see there's snipers on the roof. And they have the audacity to then turn around and tell Iran or Russia that they're, you know, bad for cracking down upon violent riots, which are funded by foreign NGOs and foreign intelligence agencies. Or for example, they'll give a very reductionist and kind of anarchistic argument that, well, okay, all types of crackdowns are bad. The crackdowns in the United States are bad and the crackdowns in Iran are bad. Well, the difference is between truth and falsehood. Let's not get the moral relativism mixed up with this. The students in America are standing for the truth, and they're doing so nonviolently. In Iran, or for example in Russia, they're standing for falsehood. They want to get rid of sovereign governments, and they're funded by nefarious foreign governments, and they're using violence. So the governments of those countries have the right to use crackdowns to stop these kind of foreign-funded agitations. So I hope that the mask has been ripped off of the American police state. And that doesn't mean we should abolish police, because, you know, obviously as a Muslim, as, you know, people, even in the Islamic Republic of Iran, we believe in laws and orders. But the issue is that people should have rights. The people should be viewed as people. The problem is the relationship between the police and the people in the United States. It's okay. An antagonistic relationship, which is very toxic and abusive.
Well, Sarah, Ali talked about snipers being on roofs. We've seen pictures of that. Interestingly enough, it's said that it was also Ohio State University. And, of course, in Ohio, 54 years ago at Kent State, we had, of course, Vietnam protests and students being killed by police. I mean, one would think that we would learn from history. And it just seems that it is repeating itself. They've come down with this violent crackdown. I mean, do you think that this is going to backfire and it's just going to increase the number of protests that we're seeing?
Very, very definitely I do think it's going to backfire. The difference is, I saw an interview with a lady from the 70s who was at Kent University a few years ago, and she said, you know, they killed Dr. King, they killed JFK, and then they killed kids at Kent State, and it was like a bullet to the brain of the American psyche. We basically got the message of, as if you stand up, we will shoot you down, basically. But now we live in an age where everything's like, you'll notice, I saw the head of philosophy get thrown to the floor and arrested, and these people shouting, what's your name, who can we contact, and we live in the age of the internet now, so in Kent State it was like happening, but then getting reported. I was like, now everything's being live streamed. You'll notice the minute anything like that starts, people get the phones out. The police were trying to arrest people doing peaceful prayer last night, and all the students, the friends surrounded him and said, let them pray, let them pray. The students at New York pushed the police off the campus. I think we all realise now, because we live in the age of the internet, that whether you come from Russia, Palestine, America, the UK, we are all human beings. We are all connected. As Dr. King said, you know, everything is connected. And whereas when they used to be able to control the narrative and be like, oh, we've got these few agitators and we've managed to calm them down, now everyone can see that the news is, you're being gaslit by the mainstream media. The State Department head is going out and saying, you know, we're not sure if there's been war crimes when we've all watched the war crimes happen on our phone. So, yeah, I think basically I think it's lit a flame now, and I don't think there's any going back. The whole world has woken up. People that I used to speak to about Palestine and used to get very twitchy, you know, like, oh, it's anti-Semitic to talk about that. And I've always said, well, no, it's not, because Zionism isn't Judaism. But even that, those people now are saying to me, and they'll talk to you more, and they're not, because it's got to the point where everyone... the occupation has exposed itself to the world. Everyone has seen what's happened, and everyone's right. Seen that the way our governments are backing that. So I don't think there's any putting the genie back in the bottle. I think it's, yeah, I think that's it now. I think everyone's woken up, and hopefully it will lead to some sort of change.
What about that, Ali? Because one thing we seem to be seeing is this type of unity amongst the students, and it transcends color of skin or class. ethnicity, religion, whatever, you know, you want to say. Because, of course, we know that in general, one of the key techniques of empire is to divide and conquer. And the situation that has happened in Gaza, the Palestinian issue, has been one that has united people from all over the world. Do you think that what we're seeing in the United States on the campus is symbolic of what is happening elsewhere, and also symbolic of possibilities if people become aware of the reality of what the hegemonic forces have been doing and continue to do?
Unity is a very powerful force, and this is something that is, I believe, scares the Zionists and the American regime the most about these things, is because not only race or ethnicity or religion or these other things, but political spectrum, because they want to try to paint the issue of Palestine as solely an issue of the left. But now we see various different political spectrums. I mean, I personally believe the left-right spectrum is a fake construct anyways. But people who are on the supposedly on the left and people who are on supposedly on the right coming out in force against this genocide, because the Zionists in the U.S. used to primarily rely on the right-wing Republican neoconservative types who are generally pro-Likud, pro-Netanyahu. They've lost a lot of the right. So what's left is maybe just maybe some older people who are from the previous generation who are subjected to that brainwashing. But the young people are not, this is not working on them. So who is their political bloc to support all their corrupted politicians going forward in both the Republican and the Democratic Party? It looks pretty bleak to them. So I think the unity factor here is very important. It brings people out from all walks of life. And also I think it's bringing, surprised me and impressed me the most is the presence of independent political groups and voices who are who are in support of the Islamic resistance acts, who aren't afraid to say the name Hamas and Hezbollah and have the picture of the commander of Izzeddin Qassam brigades and everything like that in there, is and it's based off of this slogan that I saw on one of the tents in the one of these protests, is if you are in solidarity with our corpses but not our rockets, you are a hypocrite and not from among us. So I'm glad that this type of mentality is peeking its head out into kind of hopefully taking the lead and establishing it, because every movement needs a leader. Hopefully they win, because if not, there's lots of corruption and contamination within the movement from foundation money, like George Soros and the Ford Foundation. They're trying to steer this away to make themselves seem like the hero rather than being in complementary to the valiant and brave efforts of the resistance in Palestine and Lebanon, in Iraq and in Iran. So I think this is a huge that all the billions and billions of dollars that these foundation money spends is going to be washed away, because they spend this money in order to delegitimize armed resistance. So there's going to be some to see solidarity between people in the West and with resistance factions is going to be something very beautiful that breaks down all the propaganda we've been seeing for decades.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting times, Ali. You've brought up an interesting point, because, of course, we know that the, as you said, talking about Hezbollah or talking about Hamas or Iran has been so demonized in these Western countries that people dared not even mention them or didn't even really want to talk to people who were mentioning. And what about that, Sarah? Are we seeing a total change? Has Washington's reputation now been destroyed to the point of no return? As very few people believe now that the country really stands for freedom of speech or democracy or protection of women, children, human rights. I mean, do you think that we are seeing a total change in the narrative?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anyone's heard it, but there's something circulating social media, and it's a leaked conversation with the Zionists, and they're saying it's terrifying. But this is the reason they're trying to ban TikTok. It's terrifying. They said the division in people who are pro-Zionist and who are anti-Zionist in America isn't left or right anymore. It's the young and the old. And the direct quote of the guy says, the number of young people who think Hamas's attack on October the 7th was justified is terrifyingly high. We have a serious TikTok problem. Now, that's, again, like why they're trying to ban TikTok, because they've always been able to control the narrative. Because if you watch the news now, you watch any of the mainstream media in any of the Western countries, as you said yourself, you can't mention the amount of people I've said to about Hamas, and this, I say, under international law, Hamas are entitled to armed self-defence. That's international law. So people realise that they've been being lied to. The narrative has been controlled for so long, but there's no way to control that anymore. The mainstream media is not reporting what's going on. It's still being referred to as a war when one side has got billions of dollars worth of weapons, has obliterated the Gaza Strip, and the other side is millions of people have been displaced or on the verge of starvation. So everyone's looking and going, we're being gaslit on an industrial scale. I saw a gentleman who did a TikTok and he said, I'm starting to question everything the government's ever told me. So, yeah, I think the narrative has changed, and I don't think there's any going back now. I don't know if anyone saw it, but there was a Zionist woman who went into a crowd at one of the universities, and she's wearing a T-shirt saying, I am a Jew. And her husband's filming her, and no one pays her any attention. No one could care. Like we said before, UNITA, people have realised that whether you look the same as me or not, whether you worship the same God or not, we're all just human beings. We all just want to live in peace, and the majority of people just want to live in peace.
Right.
And the Western countries have made it so that that's not even possible now. Like Ali was saying, we can't afford anything. So they've kind of pushed everyone to the point where it's like, you've got nothing left worth living, like fighting, like basically you may as well fight us. And Palestine has ignited that and changed the narrative, because we've seen how much we've all been lied to for so many years.
Right, right. Well, I mean, while we're looking at the States and Europe and the college students and joining in the protests, Rafah is still under threat of an invasion, with more people being killed there today and heavy equipment standing on the edge simply waiting to go in. Though these protests are important, do you think that it's very, very important, though, that we stay focused and definitely continue to focus on the reason why these students are protesting to begin with, and that is the continued genocide in Gaza? Because if we look at the mainstream media now, we see on the one hand they are covering the protests and trying to put it in an anti-Semitic category, and then not really talking about the genocide, the reason why these students were out there to begin with.
The reason that they're protesting should be what's being focused on. But the mainstream media, the Zionist media, is not going to tell the truth about this issue. And at the same time, we should also be realistic that what's going to liberate Palestine is the resistance axis. Okay, it's not all these other tactics must be in complement to resistance. And any of these other liberal Zionist forces that are trying to co-opt the Palestine struggle to delegitimize resistance should be, you know, called out and condemned and separated, because they're only going to harm the movement. What I fear the most is that the U.S. government, and this is the direction that they might be moving to. Many other people say that this is the case, but they're going to perhaps get rid of Netanyahu and try to establish a sort of fake two-state solution where the Zionists still get to keep part of the land they stole. A puppet government will be installed over Palestine, similar to the Palestinian Authority, which arrests and kills many Palestinian people, including the martyr of truth, Shahid Nizar Banat, rahmatullah alayh, who was killed for his outspokenness against this comprador regime led by Mahmoud Abbas. They'll do the same thing for Gaza as well, because currently Gaza is the only independent Palestinian government. There's a story in the life of Imam Ali, where
20 seconds, Ali. Go ahead. 20 seconds.
Sure. We shouldn't be fooled by the tricks of the enemy. Like when Muawiyah raises the Quran at the time of Imam Ali to fool the people, the Muawiyah of today will raise the Palestinian flag and pretend to be pro-Palestine and pretend to want to end this war, but in a way that humiliates the Palestinian people and gives them a puppet government. We should be very, very careful about that.
Okay, and on that note, thank you both for being with me. Sarah Trousdale, human rights activist out of Manchester. Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Basir Press out of Moscow. And thank you for being with us on this Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the group right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites.